ॐ भवताय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कथितां पुराणमुनिना विद्ये महाभारतं तद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्ब त्वामनुसन्ततामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणी. We're in chapter 6, verse 27. Prashanta manasam yenam yoginam sukhamuttamam yoginam sukhamuttamam upayati shanta rajasam upayati shanta rajasam Brahma-bhūtam-akalmaśam. It's really talking still starting to talk about the pala. Sorry. The pala of the contemplation, or the pala of the person who's the jnani. So person who is understood and who has antakarana shuddhi. So, prashanta manasam hi enam yoginam sukham uttamam upaiti shanta rajasam brahma bhutam akalmasham. Prashanta manasam, the yoginam, you see, enam yoginam, these are all accusative singulars. Prashanta manasam, enam yoginam. This yogi means the one, the contemplator, the meditator, the yogi. Enam yogi, this yogi. Prashanta manasam, whose mind has gained shanti through karma yoga, and through the practice of nididhyasana, through exposure to this knowledge, through the karma yoga, through the neutralization of raga dvesha, all of these things has gained a mind that enjoys peace. Right? Manas means mind. Prashanta means peace. A mind that is prashanta, it's a mind that is settled down. A mind that is just simply abides and is undisturbed. You can be an active mind, but that active mind is abiding undisturbed. It doesn't mean a mind that doesn't do anything. But the mind that is doing is an abiding, undisturbed, non-agitated mind. So, prashanta manasam. So, that yogi whose mind is prashanta manasam. Sukham uttamam. This is the nominative in the neuter. Sukham uttamam. This supreme uttamam, sukha, means the swarupa ananda. The sukha which is one's own nature. The sukha which is supreme means not subject to variation, not subject to coming and going. The sukha that is really the source of all sukha. The sukha that is the source of the sukha that the vrittis in the mind enjoy. So that supreme sukha, sukham uttamam upaiti, it reaches, it comes to, it approaches that yogi. So we have to take these two verses together. It's very beautiful. That sukha approaches that yogi whose mind is prashanta, whose mind is at peace, and also whose mind is shanta rajasam. Shanta rajasam means the one for whom the mind, for whom the rajas, this rajas, sattva rajas and tamas, the rajas, which means agitation, this particular type of agitation that Shankara speaks of, that agitation, that rajas has shanta, has become quiet. So the mind itself enjoys shanti. The rajas itself, of the sattva rajas and tamas, that rajas also has become quiet. So what does Shankara says for the rajas? prakshina mohadi klesha rajasam. That rajas, which is the defect, the klesha, the impurity of moha, of delusion, right? That is gone. That defect of delusion is what causes all of the raga dvesha. The moha is, my ananda is out here. That's really the delusion that makes me a karta, a karta, a bhokta, a doer, an enjoyer. My ananda is out here. I need to become happy by manipulating the world in one way or another. The one for whom that delusion is gone, that moha that causes all of this activity, all of this, even you can say the rajas is what's responsible, not just for the activity, it's responsible for all the aggression. You know, aggression, anger, irritation, all of this is rajas. Sattva is the shanti, where the mind is just kind of reflects consciousness. It's just abiding, it's peaceful. It's just knowledge vrittis. That's shanti. That's the sattva. The rajas is where there's a lot of energy. But when we say the person's mind, we'll get in this in the third section of the Gita, the person's mind who is rajasic, that mind is irritable, it's agitated, it's subject to anger, it feels distress. These are the qualities of rajas. Qualities of tamas for the mind's really tamasic. That means the person is subject to sleep, oversleeping, dull, lazy, no energy to get moving. All of these are qualities, tamasic qualities. So here he's talking about rajas, the one or who that delusion that causes the mind to pursue the world in order to be happy. It's one, there's nothing wrong with pursuing the... Oops, I'm sorry. I was going to take your collar off, that's why, because you're making noise. Yeah. The pursuing the world, pursuing objects in the world or situations in the world so that I can be happy. That's what causes all of the agitation. So this, that's what Shankara's are talking about here. So when he says, Shanta Rajasam, the one for whom that's come to rest, Shanta, that Rajas is gone. Then Akalmasham. Akalmasham means the one who is free from adharma, the impurity of adharma. So adharma also, this dharma adharma, the adharma causes a lot of guilt, a lot of pain, a lot of unrest. So the one who's no longer being subject to adharma. Of course, the reason you're subject to adharma is because of moha, you know, because I need this to be happy. And so that pleasure, the need for pleasure or the need for my enjoyment or my fulfillment can trump what should be done in a given situation, right? If I don't have that need to become whole, then it won't trump what should be done in a situation. And so that person for whom the adharma no longer has the capacity to trump what really should be done, right? That person is akalmasham. And that person then finally is Brahmabhutam, the one whose nature is Brahman, right? Aham Brahmasmi, the one for whom Aham Brahmasmi, the Ahankara. Now, the Ahankara isn't, the Ahankara is a burnt seed. The Ahankara is not, they're identifying in reality with the body, the mind, the sense organs. When I say in reality, it doesn't believe that. The Ahankara is a dugdha bija, it's a burnt seed. In the sense that it's still going to be there functioning, because I say I'm going to the store, or I'm thinking, or I'm doing this, or I'm doing that. But that, because I'm talking that way from the standpoint of the jiva, from the standpoint of the jiva upadhi, which is still here until the prarabdha runs out, that doesn't mean that I have any such notion that the atma has become the body, the mind, the sense organs. That aparoksha atma is something that is me, and that is my self-experience. The aparoksha atma is my self-experience, but aparoksha atma means self-evident atma. Aparoksha means self-evident. It is recognized by me. My mind has differentiated, like I did in the meditation, exactly what this meditation was about. that aparoksha atma, that me that is there, the mind has recognized that its own self, the mind recognizes that its own self is the aparoksha atma, which is Brahman, which is changeless, which is not subject, which is not identified with the mind, was not identified with the vrittis, not identified with the state of the body, not identified with the perceptions, not identified because all of the perceptions, all of the emotions, all of the experiences that are changing, change within the stability of my being. As my being remains constant, all of these things change. All of these things change, having that constant self as itself. And so now the mind has recognized the difference between satyam and mitya. It's recognized the satyam. The satyam is the me that doesn't change. The mitya is the all of the vrittis, all of the experience that are totally dependent on me for the being. I am the being. I am the self of the vrittis. But I am the satyam, the vrittis are the mitya. And that is aparoksha. That is absolutely clear. That's Brahma-bhutam. Now I recognize myself as Brahman. Because I as conscious being, the conscious being that I am not an object. I never become an object. I never become something which can come or go. I'm the changeless substratum of all things that come and go. Therefore, I'm not a thing. If I'm the changeless subject, the changeless subject of all experiences come and go, I remain solid, stable, unaffected by all of those things, then that self is independent of all of those things. And that self, not being able to be objectified as an object, is not limited by objects. Right? If you're not one with a given object, you're not limited by that object. What if your being is not one with any given object? In other words, not identified with the object. But let's say instead of saying that, say that way, say it is asanga. It is asanga. It has no attachment with any given experience. All of the experiences depend on it, on me, for their being. I'll say these are my experiences. I am the one because of whom all these experiences are known. I am the conscious being. I am the self of all of these experiences. We talk like that. We say, these are my experiences. These experiences are all known to me. I am the one who's happy. I'm the one who's sad. I'm the one who's agitated. I'm the one who's thinking this. I'm the one who saw that. Everything centers on me. And all of these are mine. Even from the standpoint of the Ajnani, all of these center on me. All of these are mine. These are my thoughts. These are my emotions. These are my perceptions. These are my knowledges. These are my vrittis. These are my thoughts. What is always there? The me. The me that gets the my. The me gets the my of the ahankara. Right? But in fact, this me remains as the constant, changeless, as all of these experiences come and go. So that's the satyam mitya. I am the self of the thoughts. So the experience, this is my thought. That's a language. But I can have that language because it is my thought. I am the self of that thought. But when we do the satyam mitya, what does it mean is that the thought has me for itself. That is true. But I am not attached. I am a sangha. I am not dependent on the thought. The emotion has me for itself. But I am not dependent on the emotion. The thought comes and goes. The emotion comes and goes. The perception comes and goes. I am the self of all of those equally without being touched in any way. When my mind awakes to that, then I become, free. Why? Because nothing happens to me. I'm not subject to change. I'm not subject to birth. I'm not subject to death. And my nature is whole and complete. Where's the bondage then? If my nature is what I want to be, If my nature is that uttama sukham, uttamam sukham, it is the very wholeness or completeness that in fact I seek to become, my mind seeks to become, but unfortunately is looking for it in the world, trying to create it in terms of an experience. See, that's the mithya, that's the bondage, is that your mind is trying to create in its own self from the standpoint of the vritti, this shanti, this wholeness, having a vritti, which is long-lasting shanti. So the vritti itself, you know, and so then I need to create that vritti. And the vrittis in the mind change by the very nature of the mind. So you can't do it. It's not possible. But that's what the mind is attempting to do. It doesn't know the satyam. It only knows itself in reference to all of its other vrittis. So by manipulating the world and this and that, it's trying to create a sense of shanti or peace, which at times it can do by fulfilling desires or going for a walk in beautiful nature or whatever. There's many different ways to give a temporary satisfaction, temporary peace. So this is what the mind is continually trying to do, is to create these temporary states of shanti. But that's not freedom, because you're always a maintenance man. You're the maintenance man or woman, you're the maintenance woman of the mind, trying to always make it happy, make it pleased, make it peaceful, by manipulating the world, putting it in a safe place and all this. Doesn't work. Never works. But once the mind recognizes the satyam mitya, it recognizes the self that illumines it, then it discovers the shanti. That is shanti, period. The self that is sukha. It is sukha, period. It's not sukha dukkha. Sukha in the sense of wholeness or fullness. Sukha, which is not something that can be defined by mental experiences or experiences of vritti. It can only be recognized. The sukha which you are, the ananda which you are, is not something that can be described to you in terms of a vritti. It's something to be recognized. Like when you're sitting and you do this differentiation and you recognize the one that is constant and you say, what am I like? Why is this self that I am called Ananda? Why? Why is it called the Beloved? Why do we say it is stable, that it is whole? Why do we say that the nature of that self is the nature of the inner friend, is the very self of the inner friend? Why are these words used? This is what we mean by Lakshana. These words have to land on the nature of yourself which is being recognized. And then you say, oh, that's true. They use this word Ananda because of this nature that I am. Right? It's not they use the word Ananda. The word, when we say the word Ananda in the world, it means bliss or happiness or joy. There is a relationship to the bliss, happiness, joy, love, all of these positive words that are brought about by vrittis. There is a relationship to these, the vritti ananda and the swarup ananda. There's a resonance. But the vritti ananda is variegated and it comes and goes. What is the very self of the vritti ananda? What is the very being of the vritti ananda? And so now you have to go to the recognition of your own presence that lights up these moments of joy as well as sadness, but these moments of joy. And then you say to yourself, compared to vritti ananda, the different types of joy, the different types of fullness, of love, of happiness, you know, all of these things, these experiences that I've had that are vrittis, that come and go, they're all variegated, and, you know, different sorts, but all positive in one way or another. How does my being relate? If I were to compare my being, just the conscious me, through this Vritti Ananda, is there a relationship? And you have to say, yes, there's a relationship. There's a reason that the ananda, that we use the word ananda, that is experienced in the vrittis as a lakshana, as a pointer to your own nature. There's differences because in the vrittis come and go and it's variegated and there's all different kinds of love and different degrees of love, different degrees of joy. But when you look at your own self, we would say that the joy or the nature of yourself, the ananda of yourself, is something in a sense incomparable to those vrittis. It's incomparable to those vrittis, but the ananda or the wholeness or the completion is so much ananda, but it's of a different sort. It is ananda, but if it's a different source, it's the very self of all ananda. So these are just words, blah, blah, blah. the words have to land on you. And then you say, yeah, that is right. The word beloved or ananda or wholeness, fullness, stability. These are just words pointing at something that is not an object, but it's the very nature of the subject. And you're the only one that can recognize that. You can't hold up, the teacher can't hold up to you and say, see, like I can hold up, see, this is a cup. And everybody can look and say, oh yes, this is a cup. But there's no self to be held up. But you don't need to hold up the self because you are that. You are that. So the recognition, it's a different type of recognition. It's the recognition of the ultimately you, the subject. And so now these words don't land on how we're used to them landing. We're used to them landing on an object, cup. But here, ananda, or wholeness, fullness, sat, chit, all of these words now have to be handled in such a way that they land on the satyam, yourself, and then you understand what that word actually means. That's how this teaching works. And it can, their words are effective and they can do that because you're here. If it weren't you, if there was some self somewhere else that you have to go find to experience, then the words can't do their job. But because you are here and you are self-evident, you are the bottom line of all your experience, then all of these words can direct the mind to recognizing the self-evident, self-luminous self that is its very self. Like the clay is the self of the pot. My being is the self of the mind. My being is the self of all of my experience. And so now these words have to keep pointing to me. And so here, for the one, for the mumukshu, for the person who's doing contemplation, or who's exposed to this knowledge, whose mind has become Prashanti, has gained some shanti, some peace, that the mind is no longer deluded, running out trying to make itself become happy. The mind isn't subject to a dharma. Then, for that mind that is just simply being, for that mind, the shanti, the ananda, the sukham ananda just fills that mind. Because that it naturally fills the mind because it's the self of the mind. It's not like the ananda, the sukham, the uttama sukham, this limitless supreme ananda. Now that you've become good, the supreme ananda comes running toward you, approaching you. It's not that it is running toward you, approaching you. It is that it is you, but your mind has taken on a condition where it's not in a condition where the agitation or the moha or the delusion is there to keep it in an affect-ridden state. of stress or hurt or agitation or trauma or worry or concern about mithya, about the world. It's not in that condition. And so as the mind is just at peace, especially in contemplation, but for jnani it's always contemplation actually. Because there's nothing to cause the mind to get itself all flustered. And if it does get itself all flustered, it's like the pot just says, oh, and goes to the clay. The pot runs to the clay. Yeah. And so for the mind of the jnani, if something's happening, it just the slightest little flicker. Because what distance is there between this uttama sukham, you know, and the mind? There's no distance. There's no separation at all. The distance is only one of ajnanam. And so when the mind recognizes, say the mind's getting lost, it just pulls itself back. That becomes instantaneous over time. Over time, as the mind assimilates the knowledge and the raga dveshas settle down and the adharma settles down, you know, and the mind just becomes like a clear plate of glass in a sense. So, at least in a meditative state, and then it becomes natural. So, for such a person who has become Brahman, means aham brahmasmi, for whom that Mahavakya is real, is a reality. So for that person, this Uttama Sukha approaches. And then, just so that you don't think that the Sukha has become the Karta and has decided to approach the mind, now we have to say it the other way. Okay. So here he says, Yunjannevam Saratmanam, Yunjannevam Saratmanam, Yogi Vigata Kalmashaha, Yogi Vigata Kalmashaha, Sukena Brahmasam Sparsham, Sukena Brahmasam Sparsham, Adyantam Sukhamashnute, Adyantam Sukhamashnute. Yunjan Evam Sada Atmanam Yogi Vigata Kalmashaha Sukena Brahma Samsparsham Atyantam Sukham Ashnute. Here he says now, instead of the Uttama Sukham being the nominative, the subject of the sentence, now the yogi is. So he says, the yogi, Vigata Kalmashaha, for whom the Kalmasha, the problem of Dharma Adharma, has gone. That person's not subject to Dharma Adharma because they're not subject to Raga Dvesha. In any real way, everything's burnt seed. It's like you do have Raga Dvesha, you have your likes and dislikes. But the likes and dislikes are missing this component. You know, the desire template, I want this so that I can be happy. That component is not there. When that component is not there, or is there only in the form of a burnt seed form because of your own ananda, because of your own self, right? Then, and because of your assimilation of experience, which we call kaushalam, you know, the karma yoga buddhi, that kaushalam, means you understand dharma and adharma. You understand the importance of it. Your choice is always going to be toward dharma, because dharma is what gives the shanti and the buddhi. It's dharma. Adharma, if pleasure, adharma plus pleasure is not pleasure. Adharma plus pleasure is guilt and agitation topped with some ice cream. It doesn't work. And so for somebody who's wise, who has understood that, then the pleasure has got to be dharma with pleasure. Then that's fine. It's no problem. Those are just the little niceties that the creation has to give, little pleasures that the creation gives. But you don't have an addiction to pleasure, because the sukha of ananda, the sukha of the self, is so much greater and of a different order. It's not so much greater in this way. Now I have a bliss vritti, but the ananda is a great much bigger bliss vritti. It isn't that, it's a different order. The ananda of yourself doesn't change. It's here right now, whether you're having a bliss vritti or not. So that's why that wholeness, that fullness has to be, that's aparoksha, has to be recognized here and now. And so for the person whose mind is settled down, this vigata means it's gone, these kalmashas are gone, these impurities have gone. For that yogi, yunjan evam sada. Sada means always. Yunjan means meditating. So focusing the mind, yunjam atmanam. Here atmanam is the mind. So pulling the mind in, yunjam means it means yoking the mind, in a sense, yoking the mind with the self. It's a word used, we don't say it this way in English, but it means a present participle. It's kind of like bringing the mind into a state of meditation in this manner. Yunjan, while bringing the mind into a state of meditation, the yogi who is vigata kalmashaha, for whom this dharma adharma is gone, sukena, easily, adverb, sukena, easily, without effort, sukham ashnute, gains atyantam sukham ashnute. Atyantam sukham is the same as this uttamam sukha, this ananda which is limitless, which is not to be bettered, right? The ananda that has no end. He attains this, or she attains this atyantam sukham. How? Brahma samsparsham. Through the contact with Brahman. So here we think, oh, I have to travel and contact Brahman. The contact with Brahman for those for the Friday class, this vritti vyapti, you know, vritti vyapti means my mind is Brahman. It's not as though there's any other. The self of the mind is Brahman, but the mind is always engaged in vrittis of mitya. That's what it does. I see this, I see that, I think about this, I think about that, I worry about this, I worry about that. All of the content of all of the vrittis are always mitya, always has something to do with samsara, something to do with the world, or with my emotional state, or my worry over my emotional state, or my worry over my prarabdha, or my worry over this, or worry over that, or my experience of this, experience of that. All mitya. So, the satyam of the vritti, of the mitya, the contents are all mitya. The satyam, the truth of those vrittis, is me. I'm the self of the vritti. I'm the one that is there, pervasive to the vritti. I illumine the vritti. It is my vritti. I'm the conscious being, which is the self of it. But the content of the vritti in terms of nama rupa, in terms of name and form, is whatever I'm thinking about, whatever I'm perceiving, whatever I'm feeling, right? So, Brahma Samsparsha means contact, touch. What does that mean? It means that the vritti, instead of its nama rupas being overwhelmed by names and forms of the samsara, it is just recognizing me. That's vritti vyapti. Vritti vyapti means the vritti, instead of taking on the form of an object, which I then illumine, is just simply recognizing me. That's why when Swamiji says, I'm just with myself between thoughts, or, you know, when the mind is engaged with this, engaged with that, I'm still very much there, aparoksha, present. But in between thoughts, so to speak, there's vritti vyapti, right? Because the mind is home. That mind is home means what? Then the clay just pervades the pot. I mean, the pot pervades the clay. See, the pot, here's the pot, is nothing but clay, right? The pot is nothing but clay, it's only clay. But say the pot is very concerned about all of the other pots. You know, it's looking this way and that way and this way and that way, as opposed to just being home with its own self. So I say, so I like clay pot, but you know, you do have to do a stretch there. Vritti. The vritti has me for itself. The mind, mind means the thought modification. I am itself. Brahman is itself. But the vritti, these thought modifications, are always engaged and concerned with whatever is going on in samsara, whatever it may be. That's the focus of the vritti. What about when the focus of the vritti is just Brahman? It's just the self of the vritti. Like whether I'm looking this way, now I have these nama rupas, all of these names and forms, I'm looking this way, but the focus, what I'm recognizing is Brahman. It's the clay. This way, I'm seeing all these nama rupas, but what do I see is the clay. Brahman. That's Brahman samsparsha. Or I'm just focused on Brahman itself without the nama rupa. It doesn't really make any difference. If I have a clay pot and I hold up a clay pot, do I have to get rid of the pot to see the clay? Absolutely not. I don't have to do anything. I just have to recognize the clay. The pot is fine. There's no dvaita between the pot and the clay. There's no duality between the pot and the clay. There is no dvaita, there is no duality between the nama rupa and Brahman and the self. But what is the vritti doing? It's not focusing on the advaita. It's not focusing, recognizing Brahman. It's recognizing itself as a subject and whatever as an object and whatever the relationship is between the two and all of the worries around that. That's the samsara. So the Brahma samsparsha is when everything becomes Ishvara, in fact. Because when everything, once I recognize this is all Brahman, then all of these namarupas are Ishvara. Do you see that? Because if I see this is all Brahman, then this, all of these namarupas, names and forms, are a manifestation of knowledge. It's only Ishvara. And that's the Uttamasukha. I either see, because there's no dukkha. When there's an absence of dukkha, then there is only my own nature, which is uttama sukha. But the trick is atyantam sukham. It means the same as uttamam sukham. It's the fullness which is the nature of the self. That's the best way. It's the fullness which is the nature of Brahman. Not a fullness or an ananda that is comparable to the gradiated bliss experiences of the vrittis. Because then you don't understand. Then you're looking for the ultimate sukham would be put in line with the vritti bliss. Okay, this is peace. And this is joy. And this is love. And this is ananda, this is bliss, and this is more bliss. Okay, so these are just names for the vrittis that are getting perhaps more and more blissful, more blissful, more blissful. Now we say uttama sukham, the supreme bliss, or atyantam sukham, endless bliss. Then what do? We put it in this line, and then that goes here, right? That's wrong. That's not where it goes. Rather, you need to recognize the atyantam sukham as your own nature that's illumining this gradation, and that is different from it. It's the very self of all of those, but itself is never changing, never becoming more or less, and is as present in the greatest bliss state as it is in the most sorrowful state, because changeless and aparoksha. So that sukha that nobody can touch, nobody can do anything about, nobody can take it away, nobody can increase it, nobody can make it less, it is absolutely whole and complete and stable. That is me. That is what fills the reality of the word me, myself, the conscious being that I am. It is this limitless sukha, ananda, that I have to recognize. And it's not in this line. Don't place it in that line, or you won't understand. Then you'll also say, like Swamiji always makes fun, Swamiji, I understand myself, but, you know, when will I get the ananda? It's because they're putting it in the that line of the of vrittis. You'll get vritti ananda when your mind settles down. The vritti ananda will be there. But the vritti ananda means just the shanta vritti. Just a peaceful mind will be there. That will be there. But that's not the ananda of the Atma. That is not the ananda of the Atma. The vritti ananda, you can say, reflects the Atma, is harmonious with the Atma, but is much different from the Atma because it comes and goes and it's gradiated. Mm-hmm. You need to look at the ananda that is here right now, no matter what. And to do that, you have to recognize the nature of me, the me that is present to every vritti. So he says, for that yogi, for whom these impurities that we've been talking about, you know, he says, as have been mentioned, as has been told, yata uptena, just as have been said, you know, and by this method that's been told, that yogi whose mind is vigata, for vigata kalmashaha, Shanka says vigata papaha, the one for whom all the papas have gone. You know, that's the adharmas. That person, without any effort, brahmasam sparsham, gains that atyantam sukham, which is the brahmasam sparsham, which is the contact with Brahman. Means the recognition of Brahman. Just simply the mind's that moment of just recognizing my being. That's the recognition. That's the samsparsha. There can't be any other samsparsha. It's the clay. The pot can't touch the clay. So let me contact the clay. The mind can't touch or contact Brahman. It is Brahman, right? And so, what allows for this so-called samsparsha is just that moment of recognition, that vritti-vyapti. It's a recognition. It's all just seeing, noticing. There comes a time when it's never not noticed. Because it's myself. So it's just the mind is so habitually engaged in noticing, you know, all of the samsara, all of the names and forms are getting totally lost. You know, it's not accustomed to recognizing its own being. But that once that changes, that's why nididhyasana is so valuable. Because you're, through nididhyasana, through contemplation, you're breaking this habitual relationship of the mind to samsara. The mind is only used to taking the self totally for granted and then focusing on names and forms, focusing on the world. Right? Taking the self, taking itself for granted, the self which is there no matter what thought is there, the self is there, and so you can miss that, right? So you just identify with whatever the names and forms are. So now what's happening is with the teaching, you recognize that, oh, my self is the self, the constant, changeless self of all of these names and all of these changing names and forms. But then the mind is so habituated to getting lost in the samsara that nididhyasana helps the mind just give it a chance to sit with what you've recognized at the time of teaching. Sit with yourself that you've recognized. And then the mind, that differentiation just becomes normal. If the differentiation, in fact, is normal, the other is abnormal. The other is delusional. That's what I mean. It's delusional. It's normal because we're all delusional. But it is delusional in the sense that yourself truly doesn't move, doesn't change. doesn't lose its shanti. It is ananda. That never changes, it never has changes, it never will change. And so, once the ajnanam, the ignorance, is removed, the mind then just abides in a normal way. The mind becomes normal. You become normal. You become whole and healthy, you know, because you're not knocking your head against the wall anymore, which is caused by the ajnanam. Okay? So easily this person, he brings all this also, this sukhena and all of this easily. The karma yoga, buddhi, nididhyasana, dharma, all of these things are brought in. That's why the whole Bhagavad Gita, there's so much on karma yoga. You know, just to take care of the, to help rein the mind in. So karma yoga, buddhi, jnanam, nididhyasana is what is necessary to help the mind, to help the mind own up its knowledge. Okay, let's stop. Why don't we stop there? Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.